Yes, so this will be rather shorter than Peter, because while you concentrate a lot on the physics, we will kind of have two talks next week. So the other Peter will be speaking about multiple interactions, and I will be speaking about partner showers. So kind of you will see the physics progress next week, which kind of is the good news, and what I'm here today to talk about is rather the bad news, namely how far we've come so far. So this will be more a historical review and then some remarks on where we're heading. So okay, I think Peter already said it. You need to rewrite because the code has expanded and it needs to be cleaned up. And C++, that's not our choice, but it's been made. And then, well, I started thinking about it something like 7 years ago, and then the hope was for a simple and robust structure, throw out all the old stuff that you don't use any longer, but more or less keep the same physics to begin with and then improve on that. But that, in fact, was not the way things developed. And to understand that, I should emphasize that Lund is rather different from Herwig. I mean, well, at least as an outsider, you have to react, but you're rather kind of well organized and everybody has an assigned task and you're kind of keeping separate pieces separate from each other. And we in Lund, we have always been much more pluralistic in the sense that we seldom agree on anything, which is good and it's bad. I mean, it's good because then you can really quarrel about the best way to do certain pieces of physics and contradict each other and maybe make progress. It's bad if you really think about us being limited in manpower trying to pull exactly in the same direction. But we are not identical people. So that's kind of, well, the outset. So just to illustrate this point, I mean, I'm kind of, you're familiar with the fact that we produce a lot of programs from Lund, and then, well, these are the ones that kind of are written in Lund by Lund people, and then there are kind of written by former Lund people or kind of temporary Lund people, or then there are, of course, the programs that have nothing to do in principle with Lund except that it's based on Lund code. And also, if you think about the physics, then, well, take a topic like final state showers. We have two, so to speak, competing algorithms developed, the shower one in Pythia and the dipole one in Ariadne. And as you'll hear next week, now I'm also working on some kind of Petit ordered. So that will bring up that number. Initial state showers, you have gained the Pythia one, the Ariadne one, the color dipole model one, and again, there's another one coming up there. String fragmentation, we have three different implementations. You probably never saw the other twos, but they are there, and they were used to cross-check and understand what's going on. So it's like this, that we are not the homogeneous set that you might easily think. So whereas my interest in C++ was really to get the physics done, and not being a C++ expert, I didn't realize that you wanted to have this kind of complete structure of things before you start doing physics. But that anyway was the way Leif did it. He really wanted this generic platform for event generation that's completely generic. You can do anything in it. And that has developed kind of into a language within the language. And as you heard from Peter, the Herwig++ people have joined this structure. And on the one hand, this is certainly very nice because it would allow us in principle to share common resources. It also has the disadvantage, of course, that if there is a bug in the common code, then it will affect both programs. It also has the other consequence that maybe I'm not so happy about, namely that Leif has then felt the requirement to keep this code completely physics neutral, no favors given to string fragmentation. And this kind of means that while it contains a lot of structure, it really is not addressing the physics to a large extent. And then what started out as this Pythia 7 project, in principle now has been split into two pieces, the PEG and then the rest, which is the physics. And this is kind of then just one slide on the PEG. I have a few more slides if you want to go to the technical details. But anyway, the PEG is supposed to be providing the basic structure. It relies on the CLHEP library for utilities. And then you're supposed to be able to plug in different physics modules here for Herwig, for Pisia, for the Ariadne program, and in principle for whatever else you want to have. The rest, the physics pieces, are summarized here, what exists. So in terms of processes, we have QCD 2 goes to 2 process in PP, and E plus E minus going to quark anti-quark. LL means this is things that Leif did. And PDF, well, GRV 94. Showers, we have the initial and final state showers of the old Pythia program, which was what I did to learn C++. Multiple interactions, nothing. Beam remnants, some simple stuff from Ariadne. Fragmentation, the simplest pieces of the string fragmentation framework are there, so you can use them. They were written by a postdoc we had a few years ago. And the pieces you need for the case when strings tend to become low mass and you start to get into the cluster region were then added to patch things up. And there are also decays which are almost fully compatible with what exists in the Pythia. However, although it looks like most of the topics here have been addressed, I would say that this is still not useful for physics studies. In many cases, these have been implemented more as kind of existence proofs rather than completely to every last detail of what needs to be done. And for instance, take an example like PDF. Well, GRV 94, that happens to be the one that you can type in half a page of code, basically. So we haven't really, well, hopefully we will have interfaces to do all the more messy ones, but that's not done. Fragmentation is okay for E plus E minus, but it doesn't really contain all of this extra stuff that we've been worrying about for multiple interactions for underlying events that we need for PP interactions if we want to do a good job over there. Other things like the showers, in principle, is okay and equivalent to what exists in Pythia now, but it's then not what I would like to have in the future, since we are also working on improving the shower algorithms. So some kind of generic lessons is that, well, this conversion takes a lot of time and much more than I think we originally foresaw. And also that, well, having this example, I can pick on him because he's not in physics anymore, but kind of we didn't really, I think, find it simple to make use of postdocs to do this kind of job. I mean, we have not only to train them in C++, but you also have to try to explain the physics that exists inside the current code, and that's a lot of work. At some point, it's almost easier to type it in yourself than to try to explain everything that this postdoc is supposed to do. So this was, in our case at least, not a good exercise. And then the problem is, of course, that since he then left physics, we then have a lot of code that kind of we in the long run probably cannot maintain. So at some stage we really have to go in here and not just expand the code but also rewrite it in a way that we know what's going on there. So well, I think that we're kind of come to a slow stop that we simply don't have the time. I mean, both Leif and I are busy with all kinds of things in Lund. And whenever you have something else to do, then this is the thing that gets the lowest priority. Tough luck, but this is the way it is. And Well, also we have problems with finances, but that's another story. So anyway, I've been speaking with the people at CERN, so I hope to take some sabbatical for a few years and go down there and work a bit more concentrated on it. And not being a C++ expert, I will certainly concentrate on getting the physics pieces in place. And I will not even try to learn the PEG before there is a manual. I've told Leif that. And so anyway, I will write the pieces, and then if Leif wants, he can then write the interface to the PEG, which in fact worked fine. This is the way I did the showers, and Leif could write the interface in a day or two. So it's nothing impossible about it. So what I then have in mind is, well, some kind of structure, and this structure may not be the final one, but this is the one that I have in mind for kind of trying out the pieces, that there will be some kind of set of particle level generators, where I guess most of it will sit in the PEG, but I will have the possibility of trying out some of my own or making use of files already generated in the context of the Lesueche court, and then feed them in. And then down here is the piece that then would be the hadron level generator that would be completely separate from the hard process generation. And well, there is some intermediate layer which is kind of, if you're handed a Higgs particle, then you have to decay that yourself. If you have handed a W particle, you decay that. But of course, very often that would already be taken care of by the hard process generators. And then you have initial and final state showers, multiple interactions, string fragmentation, and particle decays. And of course, again, this piece here is probably being taken care of anyway, so that's maybe not a high priority. And then some common utilities of different kinds. So what is that to say? Well, resonance decays. We now have this Suse-Lesueche accord, so that will kind of be used, I think, for feeding in decay tables from, say, supersymmetry. Initial and final state showers, there we are in the process of implementing the T-ordered algorithms, so I will be speaking about that next week, and they are so far in Fortran. I wish we were already writing in C++, I wouldn't have to redo it, but anyway, that's the way it is. Fortunately, from the old algorithms, I can reuse a lot of the code. For instance, in Pythia, you already have lots of matrix element corrections to decay of different supersymmetric particles, Higgs particles, and so on and so forth. And all of that will easily transport. And also, you can do, with the new code, I hope, better way of handling the CKKW, mixing in the, well, Lönnblad variant of it. I think more efficiently than with the existing code. So even if that's not a high priority, I think that in the end one should have some kind of generic utilities available to simplify that task.
So by, you mean the pseudo-shower approach?
Yeah. So he went through kind of how you take the shower step by step in the evolution. So you kind of don't use pseudocosts that are specific to one leg, but to the evolution of the event as a whole. And, multiple interaction and beam remnants, that will be something that Peter will be speaking about next week. And in fact, in the future, this piece would also come to be intertwined with this piece here, so we have some physics ideas about that. And then for string fragmentation, as I say, we have problems with continuity and maintenance of the existing codes. It will have to be re-implemented. The low mass string description has to be completed. It's incomplete so far. And a major task will be to add the possibility of having junction topologies, which are related to what happens if you have baryon beam remnants, diquarks, if you wish, where you have the possibility that you kick out several valence quarks in different directions, which again you'll hear more about next week. And okay, particle decays. Well, the decay tables by now are something like 7 or 8 years old, so in principle at least we should update them and check that they are still okay. And also as part of the decay processing and part fragmentation, we still didn't do anything with the Bose-Einstein effect, so that has to be added at some stage. And then there are some other things of different kinds, LHA, PDF, Joey, will they be available in C++?
Oh, it'd be nice if somebody besides John Campbell would adapt the Fortran version. What? He's done it?
Okay, fine. Perfect. And there are some things that certainly will not be available for a long, long time yet. One example being photon physics, real and virtual photons. This will be for the linear colliders, so we will not re-implement that, neither color reconnection. And there are some pieces that I think will kind of never be re-implemented. One being SUSY evolution. Now when we have this Lesueche chord, then we'll make use of that. The old E plus E minus standardization machinery with higher order matrix elements, that's not being used by anybody. Independent fragmentation and a lot of stuff like that. So, okay, to summarize, well, we've underestimated the amount of effort you really need to spend on this thing here. And I also, at least my experience is that it's not been successful to kind of hire in people that don't know C++ and don't know the programs and try to teach them to do the job. You may disagree, but okay, everybody. And anyway, we don't have the money for it, so it's as simple as that. And the current code is not useful. So I will kind of redefine zero. You know, it's very nice. The other week, I mean, I was speaking with Peter, I realized he didn't even know that the Tevatron had been running before run one. And you spend something like 5 years or whatever running, and it's kind of written out of the textbooks. And correspondingly, maybe we'll have to kind of redefine what year zero is in terms of Pythia 7. And kind of say that this re-implementation of not just something that you can use to test the basic ideas, but also something that's really kind of production level quality. We'll have to restart there and kind of, I think it will take something like a year to have some kind of incomplete draft that people can use, and then one more year to have something that in principle should be okay to be used, but could still be buggy, and then 3 years from now, hopefully something that you will all just want to use. And well, that's it.
Are there any CERN resources that you think that would be useful to make use of?
Well, at the first stage, not necessarily. I think that one simply has to do a lot of the physics. I mean, I have one of the ideas that is kind of a question that could be raised, and that is this question that I put here. Let's assume that we're going to write manuals. In the future, it could be a sensible idea to imagine that those manuals are written in some kind of XML, and you define some kind of, say, parameter XML type that contains a default value, allowed range, and stuff like that, and that you integrate those values with the XML code in such a way that you then could nicely format it, get it out on the screen, and actually see in a nicely formatted style what different parameters mean, what values they can take, and maybe even have it nicely interfaced so that you can have some little square or whatever that you fill in a value, and then that's saved on some file for using during the running. So I think that could be some useful project maybe, and something that could be applied to other programs as well. But I haven't been discussing that with anybody, so I mean, this is just a loose thought so far. Yeah?
So Toby's point about slave labor as well, so even we have employed people who were physicists and who had C++ experience. And even then, so Stefan took less effort, but Alberto took 6 months or a year as to train in physics. And we just can't do that with the same resources, right? You would have a year training them, and then it's not clear that everyone would get to complete the effort. But it, hopefully it will be better at the current point. In the past, we've always found that any certain resource that we've had has been more of a burden than a help. So certainly this is Brian's experience with the old days of CERNLIB, but the support we were getting took more of our time than doing it ourselves. So hopefully, I think that has changed. But getting them to do core physics pieces is just, it's just not.
Yeah. No, that's out of the question.
Yeah. So what is left of the impact in your, because it seems you just take, you start with the Lesusa core sort of interface and you build everything below from
yeah.
there on. So I can supply an ArcMate and tell me any way I
yeah.
want to. I don't have to use Campact.
You don't have to use what?
Yes.
The PEG.
Aha. Uh-huh.
The PEG. Yes, I. Well, I mean, that remains to be seen. I would say the structure I have in mind here is largely for me a matter of also debugging things. So if the PEG comes up with a nice manual where everything will be revealed, and it will be so straightforward for you to see what to do that you will want to put your matrix element into the PEG, then I think this is the way things will go. And otherwise, I think a lot of people already have generated event files using the Lesusa cord. And one way or another, we want to have the possibility of feeding in such events. And for me to debug it, it's certainly very convenient to have this common interface for what happens down here. And then if at some later stage these boxes disappear, and maybe that box fades slowly away, that's fine as well. But I think right now...
So that's sort of the five purposes. So wouldn't they have some classes with general...
No, but you could still use this thing here. And okay, Peter, you.
The problem about what is the real internal doing, I'm sorry. You understand what you have in the law of big box, but the internal is.
It's the internal part of that problem.
On the upper
that's
left corner.
The
upper left corner.
So internal.
Internal. Well, that's kind of just that I write something. For instance, basically, I could use the existing Fortran code and just write a simple interface where I output that to a Lesusa cord. I mean, right now, Pythia doesn't really, I mean, it reads and understands the Lesusa cord, but it doesn't write out events according to the Lesusa cord standard. But that's not a major issue. So I could easily kind of take the existing Fortran code here and just use that to test this piece of the program so that I don't have to test everything simultaneously.
So the problem is the documentation for the PEG is this C++ experts believe that C++ documents itself and you don't have to write documentation, you could just read the code. It's a lie, right? You've still got to write documentation, it's still got to be written, it hasn't been written.
Is that late? Needs to do that, but it's late.
Yeah. Basically,
it has to be the programmer who documents it, and it has to be another who checks it. That's basically it. If you want to have foolproof documentation, you need one guy who broke it to write it down, and one guy who uses it to check whether it's complete. That's how we proceed.
So it took me as long to learn how to handle this structure as it did to learn C++.
Yeah. And I don't feel I have that time.
So how does one soberly and objectively, how will you soberly and objectively evaluate the situation and be able to decide at some point this was a terrible mistake and drop it?
Drop.
I'm not saying you're necessarily at that point now, but you have a user-driven demand without any user support for it.
Now, which piece do you mean is
user-driven?
I think that the main motivation that even Cynthia at Herwig was just code management, right? The fact of this is a chance to go in and sort of start anew, rather than being bogged down by all the historical baggage that the
program we definitely needed to go in and clean up for sure. Doing it in C++. That was not our decision. That was your decision.
Because we're perfectly happy.
Well, no, no.
If you want this to be an LHC machinery, ask for any PhD student doing an analysis in 15 years and doing any hack in old Fortran code, and you'll experience your own private water loop. It won't happen.
So this is the only good reason I've been given to use C++ is that the incoming students don't know Fortran anymore, and training them in Fortran is not necessarily for those that leave us an employable job skill, I think.
But I mean, I completely agree with what you have been saying. I should also add, however, that there is some decision made somewhere at CERN, I don't know whom, but the decision was that Fortran 90 should not be supported by CERN. You're not allowed, in some sense, to upgrade to Fortran 90 and be guaranteed that you can use the CERN computers to run the program.
What's going to happen? They're not going to compare it as Pythia to Data.
Anybody use Fortran 90?
They're not going to compare Herwig to Data? What's going to happen? If you don't want to understand it, they're not going to give you the computing professionals you need to carry through on this project. It's not your job. You're not a computing professional. I'm not. Is the question to write ElkGen and C++ because of that? Do you think it's worthwhile for you to do that or for anybody to do that?
And I've been told
that Fortran 90 is supposed to be
very good.
It's just 10 minutes. If you know Fortran, 10 minutes you know Fortran 19, you have at least 50% of the advantages of proper C++.
Sure.
Rather 2 years learning and then having an extra. It's the ideal thing for people.
It's the ideal thing, but I mean, as these people say, most of our students don't stay in the field. They go into industry. And we have to face it. I mean, for whatever reasons, we have not been good enough at telling the rest of the world that Fortran is a good language. And since we haven't been doing that, industry believes Fortran is a bad language. And industry wants people to write C++.
To put it quite simply, I work with 5 students, each of which knows better C++ than I do. In the very moment you want to interface a Fortran code, I'll be asked. That's it. That's just it. It defines exactly what happens. You want to work with young people, go ahead, take another programming language.
What?
Well,
from 77, Fortune is from 77.
But I mean, you could also ask, should we have picked Java instead? I mean,
yeah, right.
In some cases, I would say yes.
Yeah,
C++ pointer is a nightmare.
Yeah.
I think everybody agrees that that's a bad language construct.
So for this, we've invested 6 or 8 man-years or whatever that we're now at in this London investment map out, and we're at the point that I think we've probably reached, we at least have probably reached the point of your return. We'll be on that point, right? We've invested so much effort in it that it's got to be seen through to completion. And eventually, so I've said this, so we will probably support Fortran used by CDF to the end, but eventually there will come a point where if Julian's wearing his Atlas hat, I will tell him if he asks a question about the Fortran, go away, Julian, use the C++ that.
So, but I'm thinking also in terms of, MC and LLL, right? Just which is going to be used, right? And I think that it can only be used with Fortran Herwig.
It can only be used with the Fortran Herwig Shower algorithm. That is
right. But, and I suspect that's always going to be the case.
Well, that's not entirely clear. Was it you who had some students who were interested in doing this in the C++? Or some other
Italian? No, it was Claudio Pagano.
Okay.
Somebody else.
There were some Italian students that were. So, from our core manpower, we probably don't have the manpower. But so, it's then a philosophical difference. So, Torbjörn said, I'm not prepared for a lot of the core stuff, and Torbjörn's not prepared, and we have to be prepared to put students out. We can't. Translating the string back for teaching to C++, that is not a job that can be given to a student because there's no original physics in there.
I'm just thinking of Brian and Stefano, just are either of them willing to redo the work they've already done just so that it's compatible with the C++ version of
I can't answer for Brian and Stefano.
I suspect not.
I have a different view that because MCMLO is a totally new development. And presumably you did it the first time, so maybe some other theorists will take it on. There'll be some other versions, so it still is too early to take such a pessimism.
Certainly, the shower algorithm that Peter was presenting today, in the end, will have to be the way you should do MC at NLO as well. At that stage, you will need to rewrite everything from more or less scratch.
Calculations in it will have to be just as if you wanted to present these over with pinning, you would have to redo the calculation.
Now you probably want to do that because the new showers are better.
I mean, MC at NLO can still be a Fortran, right? It's just the fact that it has to know what the Herwig plus plus Fortran showering algorithm does.
Truly, the full point about this MC at NLO is that you know what the shower does.
Right.
So you can't, in the very moment you want to interface it with Herwig plus plus, you just start fresh.
That's
the end of it.
Right.
And even if this was not the case, you might would have then and you'd say, okay, just let's take the Fortran pattern shower, would have to retune it with different patronization. Because the old and the new showers do not lead to the same patterns at hadronization level.
But
in other words, you can push it as far as you want, but at some stage you will have to work.
But I agree with Joey. I could see that MCNLO++ could be a Fortran program that just spits out event files. Because part of the job of writing that thing would be if you were to do it C++, you would have to rewrite your NLO code. As it was all based on existing NLO code belonging to Stefano Frizzioli, I think.
Furthermore, let's look at how the experiments you're going to use these. I claim they're driving this. They're going to use them to put it through a full detector simulation, which takes, for one event, takes, we're told, 2 cups of coffee. So is all this work necessary, not just to produce event files that they can process while they drink their coffee? You could produce trillions of events with these programs and they'll never look at them because they're never going to have enough computing time to put them all through their
I don't think speed, so the new code is slower than the old code. I don't think speed or anything.
Right, but they had this vision to have everything all interfaced and all these bells and whistles all together. You'd be writing things automatically and spitting it out and going right through the detector simulation, and then it's going to go and process through.
I think. We are in a situation where the codes have to be cleaned up, rewritten, whatever.
Sure, that's fine. That's progress. That's science. But
we've ended up in this position.
Stuff is not
whether
science.
This is the position we should have ended up in,
you mean IT technology?
Is
at some point you need modern IT technology.
IT, I mean.
Information technology. How you organize all this in not physics. You mean the peg is very important.
I don't want to say anything bad about that. I hate to see people's time, which I think could be used better, worrying about this.
But this requirement of having to drink 2 cups of coffee for every event is anyway.
You can go to the CMS tutorial during our last CMS week.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I just wanted to ask, I mean, what you were saying is true, and that's how you're doing business, and we feel the constraint ourselves. So now we're putting manpower into developing parameterized simulation, vector simulation, not the other one. That's like 1,000 times faster, except that you have to put in manpower so that it reproduces what the full simulation does. When we get 50 times more data, and we want to have 100 times more the color when we have the data, it's just not doable, right? So we have to put our time into getting the much faster simulation.
And some analyses like WMAS absolutely required, right? Because you need many millions of events, simulated. So you have to go with some parameterized version.
But then you have some simple programming, not just response, right? So what was the point of having 13